No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show that will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez, and together we hope we can start a dialogue about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So please join in the conversation by calling in at 628-6008, or I'm sorry, that's 1-800. It's 888-628-6008. I've been on vacation, and this shows you how old I am.
I was going to say, you've got vacation brain still.
or you can Skype your questions into BBSRADIO and the number 1. And we're just so excited to have our guest tonight who's going to talk to us about a subject I know nothing about. So I'm going to let my lovely co-host, Maria Sanchez, introduce him in a second. But first, I want to give a shout out to Representative James Himes, who's from Connecticut's 4th District, for being the 139th co-signer on our bill to make the District of Columbia state. This is significant for two reasons. It's more co-signers than we've ever had on a bill to make the District of Columbia equal. And we now have every member of the congressional delegation from the state of Connecticut, with the exception of the two senators, both who are Democrats. So Richard Blumenthal and Chris Murphy, come on, guys, stand up with your delegation and become co-sponsors in the Senate, where we only have 19 co-sponsors and we haven't had a co-sponsor since May. So come on, guys, it's time to answer the call. And with that, I turn things over to Maria Sanchez and our guests. Hi, Maria, how are you?
Hi, Michael, and welcome back. We missed you last week.
Oh, I miss you too.
And by the way, one of the guests in the second half of the program, Dr. John Horton, spoke about the hepatitis A issue that's going on in Southern California. And then it's in the news again this weekend because Governor Brown declared the state of emergency. So now vaccinations can be purchased through the federal level to help with this epidemic. So it's still in the news, but hopefully it won't affect anybody outside of California. It just keeps creeping up from San Diego up through the state. So that, I guess that's why Governor Brown made sure that to take care of it. But our guest this week.
Oh, my God, you're like to wait. I just want to say a word about the wildfires. You guys are getting like the seven plagues of Israel, right?
Yeah, it's terrible.
You have these terrible wildfires. And one of my wife's colleagues' daughter is a firefighter, you know, who does this kind of firefighting. So we hope she's safe, and we hope the people of California recover from all this. It's horrible.
It's well, and the deaths are unprecedented, and they're having to identify some of the bodies based on surgical implants or whatever, because it's got the serial number on it. The stories are, they're really gut-wrenching, emotional. It's one family they featured today, their son was killed. The mother, father, and high school daughter have burns over 60% of the body. The daughter had to have her both legs amputated below the knee. She's 17. And that's just one of the stories of the people that are devastated.
Well, so let's thank keep you all the people in California in our prayers.
Thank you. So this week, we are pleased to have Kirill Ravensong, who is our guest, conscientious banking consultant for BitShares.org. And he's going to speak with us about Bitcoins, BitShares, and how these currencies are being used around the world, and something known also as cryptocurrency, which is outside the traditional money systems that we're accustomed to. So, Kirill, you have two very fascinated hosts to listen to what it is that you have to share, and I know our listeners will be as fascinated as well. Welcome and to just the program.
Just let me say, Kirill, that you know you're talking to a guy that had studied economics as an undergraduate like 1,000 years ago. I think me and Euclid were in graduate school at the same time, but I really don't get this. I really don't get it because I can't understand a currency system that's not backed up by gold or silver or government. So please explain to us what this is all about.
All right. So first of all, guys, thank you very much for having me on. It's really a pleasure. And really, the prayers go out for those families that are suffering from all sorts of environmental catastrophes, because we're seeing that all over the world, from floods to fires to everything in between.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So,
and also the difference between BitShares and Bitcoin, too, because you can help us with that, too.
Right. All right. So do you guys know, just for example, what percentage of money is in digital form in the regular banking system?
Percentage?
Yeah, roughly, if you had to guesstimate.
Well, I have the slightest idea. Do you mean things like credit card transactions and things like that?
Yep, and forms of money that are purely in digital.
I would say, 60 or 70%, maybe even more.
Yeah, last check is a little bit over 91%. Currently.
Wow.
Right? So let that kind of sink in for a moment, right? So that's using the existing system, which the reason why, even though it's digital and it's still so slow, is they're still using a very traditional checks and balances system that's very, very inefficient compared to the new technology.
Okay.
And new technology as in what you're speaking about.
As in the blockchain. Yeah, it's the blockchain technology itself. And the blockchain technology, it's an expansion of the original cryptography tools that were developed by many governments, particularly the U.S. government, developed very, very strong cryptography. And that cryptography is the foundation of the blockchain technology and of cryptocurrency today.
And I'm not sure what blockchain, what that means even.
So blockchain, this is really big news. We're looking right now, IBM is predicting that within the next 4 years, as much as 2/3 of all banks and all financial institutions will be using blockchain technology. And a way to look at blockchain technology, it's just a public distributed ledger. You know, it's like a decentralized copy of transactions, and it creates a stability, a checks and balances inherent in the system that does not require a third party in order to verify. So in other words, you can do exchanges of value digitally across any distance in seconds, and you don't require a bank or a credit card company to verify that the transfer has gone through.
So it's entity to entity without a middle man,
peer to peer. Yep.
Okay.
Peer to peer. That's the ultimate key.
But you know, the question I have, Kirill, is that when I charge something, right? Mm-hmm. I either have the capital in the bank to back that up, or the credit with some organization that will back that up and stand behind it. So I know it's good. When they take my Visa card, they know that the money's either there or the credit's either there. How do we know that with what you're talking about?
So the underlying technology is just allowing a new function. So if you look at the internet, allows you to share information. You can send an email. You can send a video. You can put a post. It's all decentralized. A lot of them are automated. They use algorithms to sort and sift. But the system itself is actually quite stable. We use it all the time, the internet. So what blockchain is allowing us to do, it's allowing us to piggyback off of the hardware of the internet And instead of just exchanging information, we can now exchange value, and we can verify that people actually have the asset, the only asset that they're transferring. Basically, you can send money like you can send an email.
Again,
that just went over my head.
When you say peer-to-peer, so that is institution to institution? Because we keep our money in banks.
Currently, we do. And, you know, it's funny because, as I recollect, we fought the American Revolution largely against banks invalidating our money supply.
So, like Michael was saying, when we make transactions now, you either have the cash or you have the credit. But
either you have the coin in
me to Michael, where is it coming from and where is it going to if it isn't going from institution to institution?
No, it's not. This is the revelation. No, this is you have a digital wallet that stores your digital currencies. You can have multiple wallets if you so choose, and you transfer money and funds that you have to an account that someone else. So you guys can exchange money between each other, but it's only money that you have in your account.
So is it like Apple Pay?
The principle is quite different, but the functionality, when it is fully used, yes, you will not notice it any really differently from your credit card or any other online payment.
So why is there a lot of talk about conspiracies, or that it's fringe, or it's part of the dark web, or is it people's ignorance that is making those fears come out?
Well, ignorance is probably the main thing that needs to be overcome, just in general. We talk a lot about the wealth gap, but I don't often hear a lot of talk about the information gap. So there's a lot of pushback from centralized banks, because they don't like the implications of blockchain technology. And there are two kind of radical ones that come forward. One is that there is a capacity for astounding transparency with blockchain technology. That means suddenly auditing the Fed would be a very simple thing to do if the Fed was operating completely within blockchain. Same with any other major bank. Audits could be instantaneous, could be done in real time at any time. The second thing that's kind of troubling to the banks is that it makes them somewhat obsolete. This is the fullest implication of the blockchain technology, that over enough years of usage that people could really reclaim money itself and create basically tokens backed by hard assets or by services, but basically people would own money again.
Wow. That's my first impression is, wow. I mean, that would really be dramatic. And I will say that, you know, I'm old enough to remember that I used to cash checks to get cash. And when they first started using bank machines, I didn't even want to use those. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It took me a while to get through my head that I could put a card in a machine and cash money would come out and that was all okay. You know,
exactly.
So I can understand, you know, the whole ignorance thing and the reluctance to go to this sort of thing. But I'm still a little sketchy on the whole value thing. How you ascertain the value of a Bitcoin opposed to, are they in regular denominations? I mean, is a dollar a dollar?
Yes. So, is a dollar is actually a penultimate question. The answer is no. A dollar is about 3 to 4 cents.
Right. Because of the lack of gold behind it.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay.
The denominations.
So how does it fluctuate?
Yeah.
With Bitcoins, you know, I know that I can go on, like I just went to Scotland and I've got a bunch of Scottish pounds, which I have to turn in, you know, send to my bank. And I know that I can go onto my computer and find out what the exchange rate from the dollar to the pound is. What do we do with Bitcoins? How do we find that out? And does it fluctuate?
Yeah, I mean, you can,
like currency does.
It fluctuates quite wildly. Right now, what you're looking at is, you know, you figure it takes about anywhere from 10 to 20 years to pioneer a new technology. I mean, how long did it take the internet before it was fully ready for market usage? So you're looking at cryptocurrency about 10 years in, and under and being tested, by the way, under commercial circumstances, which are very, very intense. So you've seen the rise in cryptocurrency, in my mind, not so much just because of its value, although it does have an intrinsic value, which we'll get into next, but more as a storehouse of value, as a way of serving as kind of like digital gold for the millennial culture.
So what I get is that before there was YouTube, there was network, and before there was that, there was cable. So now people can publish on their own, if you will. We don't have to use Random House or one of those biggies. So this sounds to me similar, that we're just taking our currency to the next level.
In many ways, I mean, what I will say is there's kind of a danger point. There is the possibility with blockchain technology to create a monetary system that actually reflects our values and reflects real world activity, something that we don't really see right now. Right now, we see derivatives being this massive storehouse of value. I don't even know who backs them anymore, but it represents 4 to 5 times more money than is in any of the actual economies. So our current economy has separated further and further from reality. The possibility is that blockchain technology, now that it's within the control of regular people and regular networks, can stabilize a burgeoning new economy that's just more grounded in reality.
But, you know, when you talk about derivatives, that's a very interesting term, because that's really what caused the economic crisis in 2008, if I'm not mistaken, that the derivatives or maybe it was earlier than that, but the derivatives panned out not to be backed by substantial assets. So there was this crash in stocks and other things. So what's to keep that from happening with cryptocurrency?
Well, you can look at it in either way. I mean, I would say all fiat currencies that aren't backed by something do come back to their original value, which is zero. But there's nothing intrinsically wrong with a currency going down to zero. If people don't use it anymore, if it served its purpose, then it can collapse. The problem is if that system collapses and that's the only system you have. Right now, the challenge with the derivative markets collapsing is that in the 2008 crisis, the banks had the United States to bail them out. The markets no longer have that. The governments worldwide cannot afford another bailout. They won't back it. So that's changed the whole equation. So one would really say, look, if you were going to have a financial collapse, wouldn't it be nice to have at least 2 or 3 or 4 or even a dozen alternatives that could take the bandwidth just in case?
So it's not an either-or proposition? We can straddle both worlds?
I believe very strongly what you're going to see, just like you see with every other massive innovation, you see in with the new and some of the old. TV did not destroy radio. The internet did not destroy cable. You know, all of these things are cohabitating in an ecosystem of exchange of ideas.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, if one of our problems isn't a danger here, that if one of our problems in the world economy right now is the centralization of wealth, you know, so that we have rich people that are getting richer by leaps and bounds while poor people are being driven into poverty, isn't there more of a danger of that happening with a worldwide centralized currency?
Well, yes. I mean, that's why you're seeing the rise of these cryptocurrencies, which are decentralized. You're seeing it as kind of a pushback against this, it's this massive monopoly that seems to have no consequences to it. I mean, we're looking at bankers their whole industry has been convicted by our federal government of fraud. It's open. It's public record. It's totally clear. Everyone knows it. And yet somehow the consequences don't seem to quite come in. So that's the real danger of hyper-centralization of power is that you eventually become unaccountable. And the moment that occurs, I mean, that's a terrible situation to be in, but it necessitates innovation to create alternatives, which is what we're seeing with cryptocurrency.
Well, you know, I'm a little lost because I'm thinking to myself, a dollar's a dollar and a franc's a franc and a yen's a yen, but isn't a Bitcoin everywhere?
In a sense, yes, but it's the culture and the usage that really changes everything, and it's the decision-making. In other words, right now, for example, I'm looking at the hemp industry, especially as marijuana is legalizing, becoming a very, very powerful economic driver for this country. But most central banks have ruled, even in states where it's legal, that they will not give loans in relation to businesses that deal with hemp, nor would they allow legally authorized distribution centers or medical marijuana places to use banking services.
So because of the FDIC.
Exactly.
Yeah, isn't that a federal law?
Right.
Now, isn't that a federal issue? Now, isn't it interesting that banks are curating? You see, I find that very troubling. That's okay. No problem. Because cryptocurrency is simply going to start filling in these market niches. But remember, you have to look at this in the broader context. What you're seeing with the few early adopters is they're diving into this system because they need to. But the trend is already here. The banks have already said very openly, within about 10 years, they're all going to be using the equivalent of this cryptocurrency. The question is are we going to be using a cryptocurrency that is controlled by the same centralized banks we have now? Or are there going to be multiple players and something more decentralized and more stable, something that's far more egalitarian, where the users can actually have say in how the money is directed, used, maintained, and stored of value?
And does one get interest on these things?
Yes. Actually, it's one of the few instruments that you can see gains and interest. You can see that with BitShares, as opposed to Bitcoin, that they have a token that's pegged to the BitShare that goes up about 5% annually.
Yeah, and I've now, seen some of them. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, now could you distinguish between a Bitcoin and a BitShare, please?
Sure. So Bitcoin is kind of like your big brother. You know, he's the first out of the gate in terms of the cryptocurrencies. Will always have a very, very special place in this historic shift. But you can look at it very much like digital gold. It's not always so easy to use, although there are cards like BitPay that allow you to kind of preload your card with cryptocurrency, but spend it as if you were just using a regular prepaid credit card. And it's a great technology, but it has its limits. You'll notice a lot of times the transaction speeds for these things are very, very slow. Bitcoin, for example, can do about, 3 to 7 transactions per second worldwide, whereas Visa and MasterCard, they can process about 4,000 transactions worldwide.
BitShares, on the other hand,
It's the nature of the technology that they're using and the way that the exchange is structured. I think the best way I can describe it is Bitcoin is it's like a bridge, a single lane bridge over a large chasm. Mm-hmm. Whereas BitShares, it's like a 15 lane highway. BitShares do about 100,000 transactions per second.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's enough to handle the NASDAQ itself. If it was so needed, it could run a dozen Visas, all in the existing system.
And how is it that you were drawn to this industry or concept or cryptocurrency?
I would say overall it's inevitable. But about 2-3 years ago, I started just doing an inquiry into just alternatives to standard banking. I looked at credit unions. I studied with some of the guys who created R Credits and Berkshares, just alternative currencies with local usage. But it very, very quickly started to recognize that if people could take control of their money, even at the community or local level, that there were ways to kickstarting capital that we were, as a country, so familiar with, but somehow is kind of gone away. Somehow we're not seeing the capitalization of education in the same way we used to. We're not seeing investment in new businesses in the way we used to, especially small businesses. So there's definitely this new need, and I just, you know, by step, got welcomed into different groups until I found the one that had the technology that I think can really scale globally.
Which is BitShares.
It is. I mean, the thing that I'll tell you is that's really important to notice and remember about the global marketplace is that there are about 1 or 2 billion people who don't really participate in it, but they're about to. Because the new economy, you can use a smartphone to use cryptocurrencies to do exchanges anywhere in the world. So those 1 to 2 billion people who have not been able to get standard banking, they will be available to use systems like BitShares, and BitShares happens to be rather uniquely poised to be an exchange worldwide very swiftly.
So does one invest in this industry, or do you have stocks that you share, or how are you funded?
I mean, yeah, BitShares would be the stock. That would be the way that our current system is set up, is that we have a reserve that pays for the team, even if there's no appreciation of value. The company is run basically automated, like a publicly traded company with no staff except for maintenance crew.
Like artificial intelligence?
I would say smart agreements, but it's automated. It's just a simple series of architectures, but it's ultimately software.
Well,
Michael, do you feel like we're looking into the future, even though it's today?
Well, you know, one thing that really intrigues me about this whole thing, Maria, is that I think the idea of decentralizing money just is a really powerful thing. And I think that would certainly be a good thing. But the thing that worries me about it still is that it seems artificial somehow to me, that there's nothing backing it up, that there's great potential for misuse or mismanagement, or, you know, depending on what the architecture is. I mean, hell, I barely understand this. And but somebody hands me a piece of paper with Abraham Lincoln's picture on it, I know I got $5, you know?
Right,
so,
right.
I worry about that, I mean, but maybe that's my ignorance. I don't know.
Kirill, we told you that you were going to be speaking to two naive, eyes wide open hosts. But I'm curious, does our, let's say us in the United States, does our U.S. currency get moved from the institutions where we presently have it to a BitShare account?
Yes, that can be done.
Okay. But otherwise, if you didn't do that, then the money is coming from where?
So right now, you're looking at the system before it has mass adoption. What most people will do to get into BitShares is that they will buy Bitcoin first, and from Bitcoin that they will then transfer into BitShares. So that's why you're seeing a lot of pressure on these exchanges. I don't know if you've been following the news. You have your cryptocurrencies, and then you have your cryptocurrency exchanges. And there are many different vehicles for it, but that's where you turn your dollars or your digital dollars into the cryptocurrency of your choice.
So you have to get into the cryptocurrency world, and then you go to whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is there some exchange rate right now where I've got $10,000 and I get into cryptocurrency and $10,000 turns into, you know, 12,322 BitShares or Bitcoins or something like that?
Exactly. I mean, yes, you can look it up. Yeah, you can look it up in real time. And for most cryptocurrencies right now, my strong encouragement would be to just whatever amount you put into it, just hold on to it. Don't mess with it. Don't trade it. Don't try to short it. Just hold on to it and watch it. Learn about it. See what it does. You'll notice that Bitcoin is steadily increasing in value overall. I mean, it has bumps and bruises, but 2 years ago, it was at $600 a coin. Now we're looking at, geez, I mean, I think it's back up to almost 5,000. So that's a huge series of gains. Now, I don't know if you're going to see that type of growth, you know, continue indefinitely, but you will see it for the other coins. You're going to see steady growth because the fact is those on the inside track know that this technology is going to see mass adoption, and there's going to be quite a struggle for control. And that struggle for control can be greatly in the favor of regular people. The more regular people take the time to realize that there is no such thing as an ordinary citizen in extraordinary times.
You know, I've noticed that Amazon, I read somewhere that Amazon, among other people, mm-hmm. are starting to embrace this technology. So yeah. if I have a Bitcoin right now, can I go on Amazon and buy, you know, $3,000 worth of goods with it? And then
you can.
And then I have, 40% of my Bitcoin left? I mean, how does that work?
Something,
how do you subdivide it if it's worth $5,000?
Bitcoin subdivides into its smallest unit, Satoshi, 100,000 of a single one. Oh. It's quite mathematical and very seamless. It's very simple and easy to use once you're in it. But yes, it's a simple answer. They're not just Amazon. There are a whole bunch of industries. There's even a town in Switzerland where you can use it just about everywhere. And then, as I mentioned before, there are cards like Centra or BitPay, which allowed you to load up cryptocurrency but spend it like a credit card.
So I'm just finding out that some experts, PayPal in particular, and somebody mm-hmm. else, it's escaping me, says that next month, on November 18th, that's the day that the Bitcoin can explode in value and make you a millionaire. One.
It's possible. You know, we can't make flagrant claims, but I would say that there's a distinct possibility, as are Bit shares, frankly, because they're so undervalued and because the marketplace is so poised to grow. Right now, we've got roughly 1% of the population using cryptocurrencies, and we're about to see that even if that switches to 10%, it's just an order of magnitude increase in usage and storehouse of value.
But interesting that you said to hold on to it, not to spend it or trade it or sell it.
Yeah, I wouldn't, because if you're seeing, I mean, think of it. You know, if you're looking at an asset that can surge in value, please don't spend it on frivolous things. But really hold on to it at least for the next 3 years, because we're fairly confident that you're going to see like quite a shift. But it's just important to recognize that this is an extremely volatile time, and people are scrambling for a safe storehouse of value. And that's what the blockchain really offers. It offers the potential to really take a look at everything that's owned and everything that's being done, and to actually be able to look at that data, to be able to consciously examine all of the transactions that are going on. You can also maintain privacy and have transparency at the same time. Like, that's actually possible. But it has to be done conscientiously, consciously, and with great tenacity. Overall, I would say hold on to the coins. The likelihood that they will soar in value is very, very high.
And if you know that as your truth, and I understand that you don't want to make promises, and nor would we on this program want to do that, why wouldn't you keep this information to yourself?
Well, I mean, it's kind of boring, frankly. And what would be the point of being rich if everyone else is struggling? That's not why I got into this industry. I got into this industry specifically to re-harness human capital. I mean, what's money anyway? It's just an animating force. It's the humanity that I love, and it's the humanity that must be set free.
Well, and I would think that the more popular cryptocurrency gets, the more valuable it'll be.
The more that people use it, the more people use it and own that space, the more that what forms is actually community. It's a fascinating thing to notice with cryptocurrency users and aficionados, is that they bond together, sharing information, sharing different uses, building together, but it's very much a community.
You know, come on, Marie. I can see you and me on our gold-plated Harleys riding around America. You know?
But, well, and with you and I, with our feel-good, do-good, want-to-help-the-world mentalities, think about what we could do for the underprivileged and the, you know, inner cities and the world hunger and all of that stuff and eradicating diseases worldwide. And I mean, that's what I think about wealth is imagine what we could do for the rest of the world.
Oh, damn, exactly. Maria, there goes my gold-plated Harley. Now I feel
good. I'm telling you, it feels good to ride for a little while, but when you look at the hearts and minds of those that you touch, I mean, it's really, there's no greater investment right now than in people themselves.
Right.
Yeah, and I think really just you know, not to be tongue-in-cheek, but to be honest about it, I think that's really what's fascinating about this is the great potential that it might have in decentralizing that wealth, because that's a problem. We see it here in Washington, D.C., for example, where we have kids that we are the richest jurisdiction in America. We complain all the time about our rights because we pay the highest federal taxes. But the reason we pay the highest federal taxes is that we make the most money here in the District of Columbia. But we have also great, great poverty in the District of Columbia. So it really is almost Dickens-esque here in Washington that we have two separate cities, and it would be great to see that dissipate.
So my question too now is a practical one. When you're talking about cryptocurrency, do you get a ledger statement or you log on somewhere to check the value of what it is that you have? Or how is there accountability?
I have an app on my phone, for example. I just turn it on, put in my password, and I can check the amount both in terms of the cryptocurrency itself, gives me how much I have, and then I can check to see its equivalent value in U.S. dollars.
And you do, as you said, you do that in real time.
Right. And you do that in real time. And one of the interesting things you'll notice is that you'll have what's called a wallet. It's a digital wallet. You'll store your coins, your cryptocurrency in it, and you own it. You control it. It's all you.
But if someone wanted to buy a house, let's say, would they get a traditional loan? You don't borrow on cryptocurrency. You just spend?
Bitcoin itself does not yet have that functionality, but BitShares does. You actually can do something like that, give yourself a loan with the BitShares as collateral. And people have bought homes using cryptocurrency. So it would really depend on the bank and whether you're doing a cash sale or with the owner or you were attempting to navigate a mortgage. I don't know exactly how U.S. banks will approach this, but I know in Switzerland and I think in Germany they've been recognizing, I have to check that, but their banks are starting to accept them as a storehouse of value, therefore payment for a mortgage or a property.
You know, the thing that I find fascinating, I just came this afternoon from a meeting with a guy that where I'm going to be part of an international conference on economics in Portugal in May. And I just met with the head of this organization. And when I mentioned that you were going to be on the show, he said, oh, yeah, he was just at a meeting of the World Bank here in Washington. And he said, this was a large part of our discussion today. And I was amazed at that because I know so little about it. You know, that here they are at the World Bank discussing this. I thought this was really kind of out there somewhere. But
this is one of those rare stories that you'd think it's fringe, but no, it's actually like front and center. It's the event horizon. It may actually bring out honest banking. Like it's very, very fascinating how this will actually change standard banking, as well as creating alternatives for those who want to have more control over their financials.
Now, you said that it's not really run by people, it's run by the software itself?
You can look at it as an architecture of smart contracts, kind of like a living constitution, and the users can vote and participate with the decision-making of the currency itself.
So are you doing this, like, for example, this conversation that we're having today, mm-hmm. is this because it's something that you're passionate about, or are you a designated spokesperson? Oh, or?
I mean, yes and yes.
This okay.
is something I'm very, very passionate about. And remember, I look at this very much like, ultimately, it's a tool. It's going to be a very ubiquitous tool, so it's why I'm kind of excited to share it. But I'm really exhilarated by its cultural implications. The cultural implication is that humanity can finally gain control of money instead of money having control over us. This is extremely pivotal. And remember, it's just a potential. We people can sit back and just kind of wait, and then you'll see a very different reality form where the same technology will be used for far less benign purposes. So the impetus is still on people to use a tool. The part that I really want to communicate is, regardless of my own personal interest, which is very closely tied to this, we really do need to know. People do need to be informed that this is one of the most major decisions that has ever been made, and the decision has already been made. Central banks will be using blockchain technology more and more because what it provides is just breathtakingly efficient. It's superior. So that changes here, as people know.
Logging onto your website, because pardon me, Michael, I don't know if I took a look at it at bitshares.org, and I didn't really understand what I was looking at. Is there a user-friendly, like you know how they say that you speak in plain men's English as opposed to lawyer language?
Yes. So
a tutorial, if you will, or because there's blocking and there's orders and cancels and sellings and.
There are in certain degrees. I mean, it will right now. There are a few instructional videos and there are a few gamified versions that are available and in development. But this will be coming out really in the next few months, getting in a much tighter format. Right now, the people that we are serving are kind of like the early go-getters. We're looking at whole industries that are stepping into the blockchain technology, stepping into the cryptocurrency marketplace. So we're developing specified tools and systems for them to do that. And then on the other hand, as we're going through those use cases, we're informing through shows like yours so that people can just be aware and keep up to speed with the change in this marketplace.
And does anybody regulate this? Are there any, we know the banks are regulated, savings and loans are regulated through the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, and FDIC really does a lot to regulate, the Treasury Department regulates banks. Is there anybody that regulates this?
Yes, there is an organization that is forming. For ourselves at BitShares, we really do regard ourselves as the white knights of this currency. We are aiming to be completely SEC compliant. There is a self-regulating organization that is developing in relation to cryptocurrency. But by and large, this is kind of, we're in the kind of no man's land. Before regulations, before we've even figured out how to regulate. So the challenge and the exciting opportunity of the currency itself is that it's really hard to control because it doesn't require a middle person in order to verify. So there is a lot of theft and graft. There are a lot of dangers on the centralized exchanges, which are currently the only places that most people have to get into cryptocurrency. The banks haven't yet fully figured out how to integrate it. It could be 3-4 years. So there's kind of this gray area before things get formalized while they're still quite fluid.
Yeah, because, I would think, what stops me from going on the internet and setting something up and calling it Mike Money instead of Bitcoin? And selling shares and then you find out, that I bought a gold plated Harley with Maria with your money and there's nothing there. I mean, there's a lot of danger at this point, I would imagine.
I would say yes. And I really want to honor that if you do have to be aware right now. And I would also say the scandals and level of fraud in the standard centralized, legislated, regulated systems are egregious. I mean, I'm not.
That's true.
I don't want to be anti-establishment, but I'm talking about the sale of gold certificates without the gold to back it.
Right. That's true.
Very, you know. So I just want to point out, like, it's, I don't want to say, oh, well, don't be worried because this is such a mess. No, the whole thing's a mess, and we need to reestablish trust. The blockchain technology is also known as the trust protocol. It's going to take some time before we're going to be able to rebuild trust in relation to money because there have been so many scandals, so many breakdowns. The financial crash in 2008 broke a lot of hearts, broke a lot of banks, separated people from their homes. So rebuilding trust is part of what the cryptocurrency is about.
Right, and we've seen that around the world. Any of us that have lived through the junk bond crisis and some of those other things, you know, we've seen real estate values in Japan, for example, you know, people that paid millions of dollars for homes that ended up being repossessed and sold for 2 or 3% of their value. So we've seen financial markets crash all around the world, and that's true, I guess, of any device that you use, any capital device or type of currency. Well, I got to tell you, I think it's just the potential as you outline it, I think is just amazing.
Yeah, I agree. But the other thing, though, I wanted to know is, like the gal, the CEO of Bitcoin, who committed suicide, I think, in 2014. I looked more into that, and it looked like it was more personal issues. But at the time, I thought it was because she was in charge of this nefarious thing that had gone out of control. And she, you know, she did herself in, but it doesn't seem to. I mean, she was only 28 years old, and she jumped from 16 stories in Singapore. So that doesn't seem to have been about bad business. That was more about her problems and stress and et cetera.
I can't say exactly. I know there was a rash of bankers' deaths worldwide that seemed very odd, a rash of suicides from pretty high level. I don't have details on those specifics.
Okay. So, because at first it seemed to be enshrouded in, like, cloak and dagger, like I said, the dark net or something like that. But hearing you speak, it doesn't sound like it.
Yeah. No, I mean, you have to, if you understand where things come from and you understand how things are used, then you kind of demystify. You take when you light up the room, it's no longer quite as terrifying. But still, like, do recognize, like, cryptography until very recently was regarded as a munition, as a weapon. The simple capacity to encrypt a message so no one else could read it, or it was very hard for anyone else to read, that was considered like weapon-grade plutonium. It's only recently that that's become public access available, although there's been very little public usage.
Very interesting.
And let me ask you, Kirill, what is it that you want our listeners to know that we haven't touched on? What's the one? Is there one thing that you think that we haven't, the question we haven't asked, or the thing that you want to impart to people that is most important to know about this?
Sure. I would say now is the time to actually get excited about America. Now's the time to get excited about being here at this time. It's time to kind of come awake, remember what your original purpose is. And despite all of the confusion and chaos and even the opportunities, if we band together as Americans, come what may, we can make this place spectacular.
Wow. Well, you know, that is really the dream, right? I'm going to Portugal in May to talk about the American dream at an international economic conference. And I'm certainly going to have to learn a lot more about cryptocurrency between now and then because of the potential that this really has. That really would, if we could close that gap between rich and poor and America and get our economy moving again, working for everybody. You know, it really was the greatest thing about America, wasn't it? That we expanded this middle class that hadn't existed prior to the Second World War.
And my question, though, too, is, Kirill, since we have you on the program, we don't have the competitors. There are lots of choices for this industry, the cryptocurrency. Why do you distinguish yours from the others? Or how do you distinguish yours from the others?
Yeah, I mean, ours ultimately functions as an exchange. So we're really not in competition with any of the other cryptocurrencies. I would even say that the other cryptocurrencies aren't in competition with each other really very much at all. Each one serves slightly different purpose. Each one has just specific uses. So I'm not trashing any of them. I think they're all each quite elegant, but you have to look at the actual culture of the groups that design these things. We're not your standard business. We're more like Viking economics. We do this because we love it. We love the technology. We love freeing our networks, our friends from financial worries. So this is for the passion, for the excitement. And yes, it will be very, very profitable for those who really learn to master the space, just like those who figured out the internet and really were able to position themselves, the Facebooks, the Amazons. They are doing incredible business. But remember, they weren't necessarily even the first. They were just the ones who trialed and errored and figured it out and eventually were able to harness market value in a way that was undeniable.
So one has to look into the culture of the cryptocurrency to understand where they should invest themselves if they're interested.
No, I would say bring your own. I'm just saying for the innovators and for those hyper early adopters, we are not really in direct competition. It is not uncommon, and we do. Like, our company regularly reaches out to other cryptocurrencies that are doing things that are very interesting to see if we can collaborate or we can work on things together. But it's mainly because we're very solution-oriented, passion-driven, and money is like a secondary or tertiary thing for us, really. So just notice that there's a lot of that culture available. And then bring your culture. Maybe you're a diehard capitalist and you want to dominate in the global marketplace and you want to be the first person that new people who enter into this economy are greeted by. I mean, you could be the first to welcome all of Africa into the incredible products and services they never had access to ever before.
I mean, I just think the potential here is amazing. So we're running out of time here, Kirill, and you know, obviously, if you're amenable, we're going to have you back on the show because it seems to me we've just scratched the surface here, and there's still more to discuss. Mm-hmm. But tell us about your website or where we can go to start our journey into looking into this.
Sure. Well, BitShares.org really is kind of the place to begin. And everything is in development, but that's your first place to go to. You can also look at SovereignHero.com. Sovereign, okay. Like the sovereign, like a king. Hero, mm-hmm. Like, you know, and .com. So you can look there. You can look at, you know, that'll give you kind of a deeper insight. You can look up Dan Larimer, who is the inventor. He is the prime developer, and he is a fascinating guy. So you could really do well to learn about the person who created BitShares, and that'll inform, I think, quite well.
How do you spell his last name? L-A-R-I-M-E-R?
That is correct.
Okay. Because that's great for us to gather more information, because this is my first. Again, I've heard of it, but not delved into it. And my one question is will this put the Federal Reserve out of business?
Do you know, I do not believe so, truthfully speaking. I actually see most likely that there's going to be some sort of compromise. I don't know exactly where it'll be, but the possibility is we could really clean up a lot of corruption and a lot of the opaqueness of our economy. And I would say there could be uses for central banking, by the way, that are quite phenomenal. Let's not rule it out just because it got unwieldy and because it got out of control. It could be that when there are viable alternatives, the central banking steps up its game quite a bit, becomes way more responsive. So there are definitely possibilities that there'll be some sort of concurring solution set between decentralized cryptocurrencies and then centralized government-authorized institutions.
Well, that's it for us tonight, America. Thank you so much, Kirill, for being our guest and enlightening us, and I hope you come back soon. Maria, is there any last thing you want to say before we leave America with a classic song by the Beatles?
No, other than thank you, Kirill, for sharing your knowledge with us, and thank you, America,
it's
for making
pleasure.
Us a part of your week. We appreciate it.
And this song goes out to our guests and all those people interested in cryptocurrency. We'll see you next week. Thank you.
We can take it. Okay, as loud as you like. The song is another new one from a new LP. It's called Money.
Yeah. The best thing in life I do is when you can go to bed and be my
what I want.
That's what I want.
That's what I want.
That's what I want. That's what I want. Oh, love it, give me a thrill. Oh, love it, don't pay my bill. That's what I want.
That's what I want.
That's what I want. That's what I want. Capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.